We began with four major kashas. So far we've addressed two at length. I'd like to, just from a perspective of time constraints, I want to, over the next 20 minutes or so, address the questions 3 and 4. Maybe reserve a couple of minutes for a perspective on practical and how on Yom HaTzmaut. The first kashya we dealt with in length was, this is not Mashiach ben David, which it certainly is not, and some of the many sources for the notion of a process of Gula. Kashya number 2 was the Gimel Shavuos, and a recognition that even if we do accept that Gemara LaHalacha, which is far from obvious, the Hashkacha Pratis that was clear and evident in the founding of the League of Nations enabled, was the unprecedented vehicle that enabled Tsar Pachad Hashvuos. The third question that's raised, which perhaps is really what underlies a lot of the reasoned concern and reasoned controversy, as well as a lot of sort of feelings of unease with our Kamas HaMedina, is the Kasha number 3 mentioned before. Array was founded predominantly by Jews who were not religious or even anti-religious. Certainly were very important voices in the early Zionist movement who were Tamei Chachamim, or from Jews and even big Tamei Chachamim. The Nitziv among them, the Avinez, the Shem Shmuel among them. But it's inescapable that the preponderance of Zionists who work towards HaKamas HaMedina, as well as who have led the Medina, particularly in the early years of the state, were predominantly Jews who were sadly, tragically, not Mamim. How are you talking? How could this be a Yeshua? How could this be a Geula? How could this be something positive? This be something to celebrate. Rav Kasher and others, Rav Kasher and Hatzkufa Gedola, which is a fascinating two-volume set of Svarim, which he collects all sorts of Makoros and Halacha and Agada, historical Makoros, very, very fascinating. He wrote, I believe, after 67, about the Great Period. That's about the period left after 48, talks about the period left to the Six-Day War, 67. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. He points out, you look in Malachim Beis, Perek Yudalit, one of the later Malchei Yisrael was Yerovam II. And the first of the Malchei Yisrael was Yerovam ben Nebat. But he must have been a couple of centuries later, Yerovam ben Yoash. King for 41 years. Yas hara b'eini Hashem, lachem beis yudalid pasuk chav dalid. He was a Russia lo star mikol chatos Yerovam ben Nebat shehefti Yisrael. He was firmly attached to Yerovam. It's a phrase that recurs time and again in the description of Malchus Yisrael saved from Malachim. I imagine that what it means is that all the Malchus, I think Achav, if I remember correctly, is the one who doesn't get that phrase. Achav was actually a true believer in the Avodah Zarah and Baal. His wife was very meshed with Asherah. Yerovam, Chazal explained, Yerovam ben Nevat, and apparently the Malchi Yisrael who followed him, including this Yerovam ben Yoash, used religion cynically as a way of controlling the population. They realized that if they would allow the Jews to continue to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash, Aliyah L'Regel, 3 times a year, Beis HaMikdash was the spiritual capital of Yadus, but also located in the political capital of Malchei Beis David. The Gemara goes on to explain that the Malchei Beis David had unique privileges in Yeshiva Bazdara al Malchei Beis David Bilvad, and they realized that allowing the their people, the Malchi Yisrael, begin with the Yerava ben Nebat, realize if you allow the people to make Aliyah L'Rebbe three times a year to Yerushalayim, it's going to weaken their political control. And so Yerava develops his own religion, keeps his Jews, the Jews of the north, from Aliyah L'Rebbe, and that became the tradition of all the Malchi Yisrael. And Yerava ben Yoash, Yerava the second, was no exception. Lo sar mikol chatz Yerava ben Nevat. The shehechti is Israel. It was a chotei of achti. And then the very next thing that the pasuk says, the pasuk does not have much to say about Yerava ben Yoash. What it does tell us is that he vastly expanded, significantly expanded the borders of Eretz Israel. He had great military success. Kedavar Hashem Elokei Yisrael Hashem Diber Bi'Avdo Yonah Ben Amita Navi Hashem Egas HaHefer. Kadosh Baruch Hu had already told the Navi, sounds like the Yonah that we know, Alpi Pashtos, the same Yonah Ben Amita whom we know from the Nevuas Yonah. The Kadosh Baruch Hu had told him that Yerava ben Yoash will be a Kadosh Baruch Hu's vector for saving Klal Yisrael, not only expanding the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Ki ra'a Hashem es ani Yisrael morem ma'od. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Klal Yisrael in a very terrible state. Efes atzur ba'azub. Efes atzur, efes azub. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Klal Yisrael to be destroyed. Eino zeret Yisrael. V'lo dibra Hashem luchos eshen Yisrael mitachat ha'shamayim. V'yoshi ein b'yad yirav ben yosh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Yeshua, Kadosh Baruch Hu saved us through this Rasha Chote Umachti. I believe it's the Radak. It was particularly clear. He said the Pasuk Chava, why didn't the Kadosh Baruch Hu serve in such terrible shape? Lo bishvil tshuva sha'asu. It's not that the Jews in the Northern Kingdom had done tshuva. They were still Ovid Avodah Zarah. They were still entrenched in the Chatal, they still retrenched in their culture of Chet. Al Sharichim Alein, Kira Anyam, Kira Anyam. And Kadosh Baruch Hu was Moshias, Moshia. Kadosh Baruch Hu sent Yeshua through someone who was anything but a tzad. Someone who was enmeshed in Avodah Zarah. There was no tshuva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to send Yeshua through Russia. Through Russia and Russia. One of the main sources in Halakha for the notion of Kavod Malchus, as Chazal points out, is the fact that Eliyahu HaNavi showed great Kavod to Achav. Achav Melech Yisrael. One of the greatest Machtiim of all time. He was certainly not, and as you remember, you're even a little bit of Sefer Malachim. Eliyahu was one of Eliyahu's primary objectives. Part of his life's, one of the main parts of his life's work was to push back against the Chatan of Achav, and to protest again and again and again and again. He was certainly not the king that they wanted. He was very. Achav was about as far from an ideal Melech Yisrael as one could imagine. A chotei machti of the worst sort. Potentially lost his chayel to Olam Haba. Discussion in Sanhedrin. And still he did have the status of Melech Yisrael. And he was due to Olam Haba. Even more so here, Kadosh Pesukim are very clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Yeshua, HaYoshiyim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael, the Yad Yerava ben Yoash. And there are other examples as well. It's not what we hope for, it's not what we dream of, it's certainly not the ideal for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send Yeshua through people who don't represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu's values. Absolutely true. That may well be part of the Adi Broka L'Chamar. We would have been Zoch, everything would be totally miraculous, everything would be totally positive. And instead, Geulah is coming in ways that are physically painful, and often lethal, and in ways that are spiritually wrenching. Would that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have brought Yeshua and Geulah entirely through a great tzaddikim, the Manhigim Tovim, Ashrei. You were not zocher to that, but the fact that it came through apikursim doesn't mean that it cannot be a yeshua. And finally, what was the position of the gedolim? The gedolim were all against Hakama Samardina, weren't they? Well, if you check the historical record, actually not the case. In 19, just as there's much to say about this, but time doesn't allow us to expand on this. We have 7 minutes right now. So I'll tell you the following. You can look this up. Not to look at what the Mizrahi was busy with in the early 1900s, but look at what the Aguda was busy with in the early 1900s. I mentioned before the sixth Knesia Gedol, the sixth international conference of Buddhist Israel, was held in Marienbad, a resort town in Central Europe, in 1938. The shadows of World War II were growing. They described the unbelievably powerful tehillim with which they opened the conference. They all understood that there was impending danger, the worst sort for Baal Israel. And then the minutes, the published minutes of that conference, they described the various issues that were raised. One of the issues that was debated significantly was the following. At the time, the League of Nations, the big issue on the table was the partition plan. We're going to take mandatory Palestine, mandatory meaning it was part of the British mandate, maybe we'll give a peace to the Jews and a peace to the Arabs. Where should the line be? We'll give Eyalon to the Arabs, that's also becomes Jordan, the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan, initially they got, as you know, even more. They had not only the east bank of the Yarden, but after 48, they had even the west bank of the Yarden as well, Yehuda v'Shomron. And one of the big debates at the Knesset of the Knesset Israel was, should we accept the partition plan or not? Seems like it was a largely hypothetical question. If Ben-Gurion and the others would ask us what we hold, what would be our das ter? Should we accept the partition plan? Should we not accept the partition plan? So Rav Nachum Zemba, when the Poel Shel Gedolim, he was the leader of the group that said, there were two main groups and there was a third tiny group. Rav Nachum Zemba was the leader of the group that held, how can you accept the partition plan? You're going to give away part of Eretz Yisrael? It's like asking a parent to choose which of her children to keep alive. That very mushel, as you know, was tragically reality during the Holocaust. He says, how could you ask me to give away part of Eretz Yisrael? Chas v'chalil, we can't accept anything less. We can't give away any of Eretz Yisrael. We can't accept potential plan, we can only accept the whole thing. And then Richardson and the other major group and the other Rabbanim of Buddhist Israel, they said, you're the same Drakasha, we're not giving anything away. Right now we have nothing. Not that we're giving away. Right now we have zero, they're offering us half. So half a loaf is better than nothing. That was the big muffling. Rov minion of the Rabbanim of Buddhist Israel has held either Tzad Aleph or Tzad Beis. And then you see there was a tiny third group, which seems to have consisted, you get the impression from the Aguda records, basically of two people, Rav Chanan and Aaron Cutler, who said, Chas v'shalom, we can't accept any Medina of any type. To accept any Medina before Bias HaMashiach is Kfira, the Mus HaMashiach. The others were held that way with the Hungarian Rabbanim, the Satmarov and Papa and Salem, and Minkach and Spinka. They apparently decided to not even show up because they knew they would be voted. So all the Litvish and Polish of Gedolim were there, and Rov Binyamin of Litvish and Polish of Gedolim held, of course we're going to, you know, Avada we would prefer to have a Medina goes run out of Pitorah. If not, then not. We'll take what we can get. And let's handle about, should that Medina, is it okay to accept the Medina that doesn't include all their Yisrael, or not? It's not the case It's not the case that the Rav and Rav Kook were the only ones who had positive feelings at the time about Hakamas Samadina. And not only positive feelings about Hakamas Samadina, but if you take a look in volume 2 of Tufa Gedola, he reprints the letters that went out in 48-49, Tosh and Tesh, encouraging Shomrei Mitzvahs to vote in the first election for Knesset. So there are several letters. I think there are three letters here. One is by Rabbanim, and one is by Rebbes, and one is by Rosh Yeshiva. The one by Rabbanim, signed by over 200 Rabbanim, around 200 Rabbanim, I didn't count exactly, but around 200 Rabbanim from across Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, and across the country. And in open, it talks about the importance of voting for religious representatives in the Knesset and not to shy away from voting. But they don't just say that. They open, V'var Rabbanei Yisrael al-Av Hashem v'Tzion, Nodel Hashem al-Shezachir Baruch Rachamav v'Chasadav, L'Ros Esavitzanim HaRishonim Shal Haskalta D'Gu'ula Im HaKamasa Shal Medinas Yisrael. Signed by 200 Rabbanim. Some names don't surprise you, like Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Rav Shaul Yisraeli. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach signed this. Rav Zalman Sarotskin signed this. Rav Chatzkel Sarna of Chevron signed this. Rav Gershon Lapidus signed this. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank signed this. And on and on and on. And there's plenty more evidence, both from Eretz Yisrael and from America. But we're not, you know, Machlokas is not surprising. We're used to Machlokas in every area of Halacha. The Kachi Dabar Shatar, Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to give us the Torah in a way, as Rama writes in Avodah Mekudesh Mishnayos, that Machlokas is going to be inevitable. I'm not scared of Machlokas between legitimate Tamei Chachamim and Halacha. We're not afraid of Machlokas in legitimate Tamei Chachamim in Machshava. Hopefully this has helped to shed a little bit of light on some of the shitos. I would close very briefly, Halacha Lamasa. Give you, there's lots to say, but I'll give you in a nutshell. Rav Schechter, I should stress, is if you're looking for a sophisticated approach to religious Zionism, so there are four out of the 40 simanim in the Sefer Bikri Atzon, together, put together a coherent halachic theory of how to look at the Medina. Simanim Yud Ches, Lamed Beis and Lamed Gimel. Talk about the developed idea of Asal to the Gula and the halacha the substance of way. Kurban and Binyan. In terms of Hanhagas, there are many different approaches. I'll give you the approach of Meir Vein, the Rebbe of Schechter, based in significant part on the overall approach to the Rav and halachic man. But we don't just make up ceremonies. Halacha has many kumim. And Klal Yisrael, as we began with, we're able to deal with new situations using the categories of halakha that we've had from beforehand. To make a long story short, and we're going to have to abbreviate incredibly because of time, Yom HaTzimut, Apipashas fits in very much into the category of Hanukkah and Purim. Look at the way the Gemara talks about Halal and Hanukkah and Halal and Purim. And Hanukkah was a nase of Yeshua that happened there to saw the result in Jewish sovereignty as opposed to Purim, which did not. So Yom HaTzimut very much fits that bill, based on what we spoke about. It makes sense for that reason to say Hallel on Yom HaTzimut. The Shechter points out that Bracha, no Bracha, Chatzia, Hallel Shalom. People tend to get very hot of the collar about that sometimes. People assume that's due to how big a Zionist you are. The Shechter, the Darko points out, it's a machlokes whether you should say Hallel Shalom with a bracha or chatzia Hallel without a bracha. Really, machlokes is a chasim sofer than a tzid, which is sort of strange because they lived in the 17 and 1800s. Yeah, because they had a machlokes whether Hallel and Chanukah is the raisa drabban. I mean, Hallel Chanukah is the raisa, but Chanukah is drabban. The answer is some sofer understand, but there's a din daraisa that you have to say Hallel in response to an ace. So once anytime there's a Yeshua b'derech nase, the time of Hanukkah, so that calls for a Chiyur Hallel. And the Nitziv, as Rias from Bracha, that's not so, that's Drabanan, and he responds to some Sefer, Hallel B'Shas HaNeis is the Reis HaHal Zeichel HaNeis, is only drabana.
Oh, napkemina.
Napkemina. If you hold that Hal Zechronais is an inherent kriya on kamakavua dinami and yom hatzmut, and Hal today should be a natural kriya. It's a natural kriya to say Hal shalom the bracha, just like any time you have a kriya Hal. Now she'ena king, if it's not an automatic kriya, it's meaningful, but not automatic kriya. In time of Hanukkah, there was specific takanas chazal to say Hal on ongoing basis Zechronais. So we did not have an ongoing. We do not have a takanas chazal. To say how on Yom HaTzimot. So with the Chassam Sefer, it's a chiyuv, you should say how shalom the bracha. But according to the Tzif, there's no automatic chiyuv. The Gemara in Tainus speaks about the notion of a hal nitah minna. The Gemara says that Rosh Chodesh, they did the minig in these early days of the Amoron, they did not say how Rosh Chodesh in Eretz itself. They did say how Rosh Chodesh in Babel, and it's appropriate to say chatzi hal nitah minna. So that would be why, if one takes the person in Tziv, we would say Chatzi Hal. And whether or not one makes a bracha on Hal Rosh Chodesh is the old machlokas of Rishonim, Rabbi Lotam Rambam, machlokas Sfarim Ashkenazim, described as a beautiful shtickle about this in the Sefer. So Sfarim don't say bracha on Chatzi Hal on Rosh Chodesh. Shef to say Havudo Lostifala, you have a 2,000-year-old minig, so that's already machlokas Rishonim, but Ashkenazim say bracha. We're even more scared to say a bracha on a more recent minute. But it's not that Chassam Sofer was more pro Hanukkah and the Netziv was somehow anti Chashmonaites. Nothing to do with that. It has to be the Lumdus of Halal, not with the Lumdus of Hanukkah, or for that matter, the Lumdus of Yom HaSmut. With that in mind, much as one doesn't say Tachmon, certainly doesn't say lot. The same would be true on Hanukkah Purim. Same would be true today as well. In terms of Avelos Sefira, the time doesn't allow us to expand on that. The Shef is of the assumption that Avelos, based on the Rav's approach, Avelos Sefira is patterned after Yud Beis Chodesh, which does not yield even to Yom Tov D'Oraisa, certainly not to Hanukkah Purim. So he would assume, unlike other poskim, that Yom HaTzimut does not allow you to ignore that veil sphere. You cannot take a haircut. Can't stop as I listen to music. Cannot get married. However, much as Ramesha Feinstein writes, if I'm keeping first sphere, but someone's keeping second sphere, he gets married a few days after the Pesach, I can go to the wedding, and I can dance at his wedding, because once it's a Simcha Shal Mitzvah, he's allowed to get married, he's not keeping a veil sphere. I am, but it's a Simcha Shal Makala, that mitzvah, Simcha Shal Mitzvah overrides Avel Shal Sfir. I'll be partial, the same should be true for Shavu Brachas as well. It falls out during Avel Shal Sfir. And he assumes, stop to listen to music, to Hulia, as he put it, is a violation of Avel Shal Sfir. But to sing and dance as an expression of Shir Shal Sfir Brachas, the Dayat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the Nisim and the Nevuas and the Salt of the Gula, so that's a Simcha Shal Mitzvah, whether in the context of the Chagiga or in the context of Sudas Adah, and that would absolutely be appropriate. I checked that within maybe a couple of years before going down to the Ar Chagiga and going to the YU Sudas Adah.